This PCR test was never really licensed for use for diagnostics because you don't do that sort of thing. You don't use a PCR test to diagnose a disease, especially if someone has no symptoms, then he's not ill. Instead of doing medicine, diagnosing a pandemic, it was a laboratory pandemic that got the world into its clutches.
In our daily lives, so many of us are caught off guard with questions about our vaccination status and perhaps the overwhelming amount of advertisements to receive the COVID-19 vaccine is likely the cause. Universities and some workplaces are requiring employees and students to show proof of vaccination. But what happened to the My Body, My Choice movement? And at what point does this level of coercion become criminal? Or is it already? I'm independent journalist Taylor Hudak, and today I speak with Dr. Sutra Bhakti. Dr. Bhakti is a medical doctor and experienced microbiologist. He has written over 300 articles on immunology, virology, bacteriology, and parasitology, and has won numerous awards for this work. In September of 2020, he co-authored the book, Corona, False Alarm, Facts, and Figures. And today he joins me to provide his professional and expert opinion on the COVID-19 gene-based vaccines and whether or not vaccine passports are a reasonable response to this virus. Dr. Bhakti, thank you for joining me today.
Pleasure.
So can we begin with your history within the medical field and your qualifications?
Well, I'm a trained physician, trained in Germany. I became a microbiologist, and I ended up doing research and clinical work at the same time. And I chaired the Department of Medical Microbiology and Hygiene at the University of Mainz for 22 years, up until my retirement in 2012. That's 9 years ago.
So I just want to begin with some basic questions here about COVID-19. Is COVID-19 something that we should fear perhaps more than, say, the annual influenza virus or any other coronavirus?
I think that COVID-19 is a disease that we can now say is, thank goodness, not half as dangerous, not a tenth as dangerous as one was supposed to believe a year ago. In fact, it is for people under 70, less dangerous than the flu. This has been shown by probably the top epidemiologist in the world, John Ioannidis of Stanford, and it is undisputed.
Many of the viewers right now may be confused to hear that COVID-19 is not as deadly as it is being portrayed in the mainstream press, but can you explain why there have been so many recorded deaths as a result of COVID-19?
Because of the test that has turned medicine upside down. You know, when I studied medicine, my professors taught me that if someone is ill, then you have to try to diagnose the illness. And you do this by examining the patient, talking to him or her. And then if you need a lab test, you can use it to either confirm or to place your diagnosis on a firm basis. Now, when this virus appeared out of the blue a year ago, it hadn't even been isolated from a patient. It was just a sequence of this virus gene that was made known by the Chinese lab. And then within just 2 weeks, this German lab came up with a PCR test. And this PCR test was never really licensed for use for diagnostics because you don't do that sort of thing. You don't use a PCR test to diagnose a disease, especially if someone has no symptoms, then he's not ill. And then you never use a lab test to do anything with normal people. So what happened was that instead of doing medicine, diagnosing a pandemic, it was a laboratory pandemic that got the world into its clutches. And there we are still. This test, this PCR test, people don't realize, and I think I'm going to try to explain this in a way that maybe, you see, this test detects fragments of a gene. If a gene is a string of beads, then you just look at one, two, or three beads in the whole string. And because you can't look at one little gene fragment, you have to multiply it. So there are these cycles of multiplication. Every cycle doubles that fragment. So, you know, if you have $1 and you double it with every cycle, let's say every minute, how many cycles do you need to get $1 million out of $1? Question, answer, you need 20 cycles, okay? So that is the cycle of joy. You get $1 million out of one. If you have 1 cent, how many cycles do you need to get $1 million? The answer is 27, all right? So if the less you have, the more cycles you have to run to get to $1 million. Now, the PCR test also does this. If you have $1 and say now you have infectious virus, enough infectious virus particles to cause infection, then you need 20 cycles and you can see that the virus is there. If you only have bits of this virus because the virus has been degraded, okay, the infection was 2 weeks ago and the virus is still bits and pieces sticking in your throat, so you don't have $1 anymore, you have 1 cent, you will never be able to do anything with 1 cent. And this virus is also not infective. But if you do 27 cycles, you suddenly reach the point that you're rich, okay? So it's the same, you know, alcohol breath test. You blow into this pipe or whatever you have, and you've drunk 100 mils of vodka, so up it goes to 1.0 and off is your driver's license. If you have only drunk 1 mil of vodka, then it goes up to 0.01 and you keep your license. So when you set up a PCR and you want to use it for diagnosis, what you need to do is you need to have that virus to calibrate, you know, to see how many cycles do you run and still see that you have the virus. If you run it too long, then you're seeing fragments of the virus. And this you can tell if you have the virus there because you chop it up and then you see the fragments, all right? Now, the Drosten lab never had this virus when they invented the PCR. And so Drosten said, run this machine 45 cycles, okay, which is all right. But any time the threshold was met, even if it was cycle number 30 or 35 or 40, it was graded positive. It's just as if when you have an alcohol breath test and it goes up to 0.01 and you say it's positive and give me your license. That is what is happening right now, you see. So these poor guys who are being tested, who are running around with a positive test and a cycle threshold that is over 30, and they're put into quarantine, all right? The whole family is. I mean, this is what, of course, is criminal. It's criminal. People are being, you know, their freedom is being taken away.
I wanted to ask you about the government's response to COVID-19, and it has been largely based off of these positive PCR tests and cases. So do you think that these mask mandates, social distancing, stay-at-home orders, and lockdowns were ever justified as a way to suppress the spread of COVID-19?
Look, I know that they were absolute nonsense. I don't believe. And anyone who's thought about this and read about this knows. So what is being done now is it's criminal. It's criminal. There's nothing else to say about it.
Now, many public health officials and politicians are telling us that a vaccine is our way back to normalcy. In your expert opinion, is a vaccine a reasonable and necessary medical intervention to prevent the spread of COVID-19?
Of course not. Can't work. I mean, I'm not an anti-vax. All right, I've taught in infectious diseases for, 35 years? And I'm a pro-vax. I say, you know, get your jab against tetanus, against diphtheria. It's good. But don't ever think that this vaccine will do any use at all. Because, you know, there are three reasons. First of all, what people don't realize is that the antibodies that people are frantically trying to get by this jab are sitting on the wrong side of the wall. You know, if this were the blood vessel, I was an antibody against COVID-19 or whatever you want to call this damn virus. The virus is not coming in here. It's coming into the front door, coming in via the, you know, outside world, the airway, okay? So antibodies sitting in your blood will never be able to protect you. Now, some people tell me, but that can't be true. We're being vaccinated against pneumococci, all right, or Haemophilus, and they go through to the lungs, and we're protected. First of all, you are not protected against infection by these bacteria. They do get into the lung. They do get into the lung, and they also cause damage. What the vaccination does, it prevents the spread of the bacteria in the blood, because there you really have antibodies. Now, the thing about the COVID-19 is it doesn't spread in the blood. It gets into your lung, and if you die, you die because your lung is damaged to a point of no return. Okay? Now, this does not happen very often, but that you will not prevent with this vaccine. And then, of course, some very not knowledgeable people come and tell me, but antibodies are also secreted to the bronchi. All right. These are the so-called IgA antibodies, secretory antibodies. And then I say, true, but the amount is very important. Very few antibodies are secreted by IgA to the lumen, to the bronchi, and in the lung itself, you know, in the alveoli, where the blood gas exchange takes place. There you don't have it. We have so little that you can forget it. And what people don't realize is that this is well known, that the IgA antibodies play no real role in protecting against viral pneumonia, because there is a genetic immune deficiency called IgA deficiency. So these people have no antibodies from that are secreted out to meet the virus as it comes in by the airway. And these people do not have increased numbers of COVID-19 infections. They don't. Or corona infections or influenza. They don't. So it's completely clear that even if the antibodies were there and were excreted, they don't really play a role. I hope I've made myself clear. The number, you know, it's a numbers game. You know, one antibody can grasp one virus and then it's gone. If the next virus comes and this antibody is gone, that virus is going to enter the cell. Point. That's why you don't have any vaccination that works against a virus that comes into the lung by the airway and stays in the lung. There is no vaccination that works.
Can you explain briefly how these gene-based vaccines differ from traditional vaccines?
You know, this is the spike of the virus that, as you know, grasps the handle of the door and opens the door so that the virus can go in. The conventional flu vaccine would be the spike itself, the dead spike, not the living spike. And it's put in your arm, it goes into your immune system, and then antibodies are made so that when the real bug, the virus, comes, this is the thought, but it doesn't work, as I told you, because the antibodies are not there. If the antibodies are there, the antibodies will grab this so that this spike cannot get into my head. My head is the cell, okay? But as I said, this doesn't work. It doesn't work for the flu either. It's just done, but it doesn't work. Now, the gene-based vaccines, all of them, whether it's Astra or Moderna or BioNTech, it's the gene for the spike, so the gene itself, that is plunged into your arm, okay? Not one gene, a billion gene, the same gene, a billion times, okay, approximately. And off it goes into your body. Some of it stays, some of it goes into the lymph nodes, and a lot of it goes into the bloodstream, because anything you put in the muscle goes into the bloodstream. And once in the bloodstream, these billion or millions of packages of the gene for this circulate and are taken up by the cells they contact. Some of them are the blood cells, but the most of the cells that they contact will be the cells of the vessel lining, all right? The tapestry on the wall. These are cells, endothelial cells, and they are bound to take up these vaccines because the vaccines, especially where the blood flow is sluggish, has a lot of time to enter these cells. And once they're in the cell, all right, they will start making the spike. So if this were a cell, this is the bloodstream here, and this has taken up the gene, then the spike will slowly appear. Do you see this? This is the spike, jutting out of the cell. And at the same time, waste products of the spike protein that haven't been used will also be exported to the outside of the cell. Oops, sorry. Here we are. So we have the spike. The spike and the waste product. Now, this spike of the coronavirus has a very special property. It is able to bind platelets. Oh, I don't have a platelet here. Sorry. Let's say this is a platelet, all right? A platelet that is flowing by and touches the spike. This platelet is going to get activated. And when you activate your platelets, it sets blood clotting going, okay? All right. Second, this is a lymphocyte, and it's a killer lymphocyte. And all of you have killer lymphocytes that recognize the waste of coronaviruses. It is this because your immune system has been, having bouts of training with these coronaviruses since you were a little child, the kindergarten. So when this killer lymphocyte comes along, sees this waste, what this killer lymphocyte will do is it's going to try to kill the cell. Because your immune system, your lymphocytes, are trained to take away your cells that dare to make virus. And so what happens is that the tapestry of your room is going to be scraped and damaged. And wherever you have damage to the vessel lining on the inside, that sets off the platelets and the blood clotting. So what we said months ago was that we were awfully scared that these gene-based vaccines were all going to cause blood clots to form in your body. And any formation of blood clots in a living human being is something that is awfully, awfully serious. You know, depending where that clot forms, you can die. Now, we didn't know when we wrote this and also gave interviews on this and said, we are afraid that this is going to happen, where these blood clots were going to form, all right? That was back in January. And at the end of February, we wrote an open letter that was published where we said, beware of blood clot formation. And lo and behold, within the next 1 week after we published this letter, reports came in. My God, yeah. Young women dying of lung embolisms, people dying of blood clots in the brain, you know, brain vessels. This is no joke. If a blood clot starts to form in the sinus, in your venous, the veins of your brain, it's a life-threatening event that takes you to the emergency department, and you have to be looked at and you have to be treated. Now, what are the cardinal signs of blood clot formation in the brain? Question to the medical student if he wants to get, you know, pass his exam. And if a student does not know this, he fails his exam. Splitting headaches, nausea, vomiting, because the pressure in the brain goes up, you see. Splitting headache, nausea, vomiting, blurred consciousness. You start losing consciousness. Paralysis, deafness, blurred vision. You're not able to speak properly. You can have paralysis of the whole arm or the whole side of your body, or even, weirdly enough, convulsions. Or, you know, jerking, this loss of motoric control. These are all possible symptoms of clot formation in cerebral veins, cerebral vein thrombosis. If you put in CVT, cerebral vein thrombosis, and I advise every one of you who's listening now to go and Google CVT, you will come up with all those symptoms that have been reported ever since the beginning of vaccination with Moderna, with BioNTech, with AstraZeneca. And so we are now completely sure that thrombosis in cerebral veins is one of the major events that happen, adverse events, each of which is life-threatening, each of which must take you to the emergency department where the doctors have to look to see if there's clot being formed, because if there is clot being formed, you damn well need treatment very, very, very quickly. Have I said enough? You see, the thing is this, the moment the virus gets into your body, it goes to the lung, and mainly it stays there. It doesn't go many other places. But if you go and inject this gene so that it can float around in your body, it gets to places where the dear Lord never intended it to get to. And this is something that people just have to understand. You know, man should not rise above whatever nature means. And if nature did not mean to have this gene of this virus float around in your body, you better not do it yourself, all right? Not a good idea at all.
For people who are watching right now who may be contemplating whether or not they want to receive the vaccine, what do you say to them if they're weighing the risk benefits?
Well, I'll come back to John Ioannidis and his analysis, which each and every one of you should read, because it's there for you to read. And you can see that for people under 70 with no pre-existing illness, the infection fatality rate, meaning how many percent of the infected might die, approaches zero. So if you are under 70 and you have no severe pre-existing disease, and you want to take this vaccine, you can do it. But I won't know why you should want to do it, since you can't die of this virus, but you can damn well die of the vaccine. And there have been deaths already. All right. Now, if you have pre-existing illness and you are under 70, the risk of dying is still only 0.05, meaning that 5 out of 10,000 infected people, infected who have the virus, may die. Now, if you think that you can reduce the chances of dying by taking this vaccine, you do it. But I will tell you that the number of severe adverse events far, far exceeds 5 per 10,000 shots. Far. About 0.5% of the people who have received these shots have severe adverse effects, such that they can't go to work, such that they're in bed for days, and maybe 10% of these are going to be maimed for life. They will never get on their feet, back on their feet, and some have died. So if you want to take that risk, it's all right, go ahead. But I certainly am not going to do that, all right? I won't do it for myself, and I won't do it for my children, and I won't have my children do it either, because I think it's absolutely foolish. Now, if you are above 80 and you have no pre-existing illness, severe, all right, your chances of dying are also extremely small. It's only if you have pre-existing illnesses, cardiac disease, okay, and you know all of these, lung disease, cancer, you may profit if a vaccination works. But as I told you about 20 minutes ago, this vaccination can't work because the antibodies are on the wrong side of the wall. Even in the 80-year-old people, there is no leak of these antibodies outside the blood vessel. So I just want to tell you, guys, don't believe it. Just don't believe it. Read up. You can read all of this up in the books. Yeah, and you know, I used to tell my students, listen, if you're not sure about anything, a good doctor has the duty to read, to educate himself. That, you know, that's what I do. I'm pensioned. I'm not working anymore. But I spend so much of my time reading. I've been reading up on COVID, on Corona, because I needed to know more and more about it. And now I know a fair amount about it, and I know why all these things are not working and will never work.
Can you think of any reason as to why the public health industry is adamant that healthy people with no pre-existing conditions receive this experimental vaccine?
Well, there are many people who are telling me many things, all right? It's not something that I thought of myself, but it's clear that many people think there's an agenda behind this. It is the will of the powerful elite that vaccination, mass scale vaccination, is going to be installed in the world population for the future with gene-based vaccines, and the mRNA vaccines are the ones that are being targeted for now, right now. The trouble is, you see, that these vaccines underlie no control whatsoever, first of all. That means no one ever looks to see what is contained in these vials. There's no quality control. And once these vaccines have been okayed for use fully, there will be no control for the future vaccines either. And there will be no clinical trials at all. No, you know, benefit, risk, benefit versus adverse effects, nothing. They will just be there. And either you take the jab or you will be discriminated, you will be excluded from the, that's what's happening in Europe. I was so admiring the Americans, that there are states that obviously have prohibited this whole business of health passport certificates. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. And I wanted to ask you about that, because in your book that you wrote with your wife, a microbiologist, Dr. Karina Reese, the book came out in the fall of 2020. It's titled Corona, False Alarm, Facts and Figures. You address the idea of vaccine passports. And in this book, it states, quote, "The idea of a personal immune status document is scientifically unsound," end quote. Can you explain why that is?
Okay, you read that book.
I did.
And we wrote that back in September, I think. Mm-hmm. Scientifically unsound. First, because, as I said right at the beginning, these antibodies, whose presence or absence are supposedly documented in this document, okay, do not protect. So it's scientifically unsound to say you need a passport to say that you're protected. This is the simple reason why there's no, you know, if you have an immune passport that says you are vaccinated against tetanus, that is scientifically sound, and we do have that, but not against COVID-19. But to introduce these health certificates because of the COVID-19 and to use them for to check to see whether someone is vaccinated or not, that is criminal.
That's criminal.
Of course, because you are pretending to say that something is working that does not work, has never been shown to work, and will never work. And, you know, all this business that the vaccines have been shown to be effective, 95%, is also criminal because it's never been shown, this 95% protection. Protection against what? I want to go to this trial, you know, just one trial that where the numbers are sort of known to me, the BioNTech Pfizer. I think they had 20,000 in one group got the jab, and the other 20,000 didn't get the jab. And then they followed these people over weeks, I think 8 weeks, to see how many COVID-19 cases occurred in one group versus the other. And as you probably know, in the vaccinated group, there were, I think, about 10. And in the non-vaccinated group, I think there were 150. So 95% protection in the group. However, what people don't read is that among those, how were those 150 cases diagnosed? They were diagnosed mainly with this PCR test that is lying all the time, with the alcohol breath test. So when it goes up to 0.01, it's positive. And so they had been protecting against cough or cold plus a PCR test that was worthless. So what they were protecting against, no one has ever found out, but certainly not against severe illness and death because of COVID-19. Certainly not. So in fact, you know, efficacy has never been shown in any of these vaccine trials because efficacy must be based on protection against severe disease and death. Anything else, a PCR test, you can't protect against. I mean, this is so ridiculous. And I don't understand why the Americans, you know, the Americans, I was born in America, okay? My mother was trained at the Johns Hopkins, the first Thai woman to be trained at Johns Hopkins abroad as a doctor. And she taught me so much when I was a little child. And she told me that the Americans were just wonderful. They were the best doctors in the world, and she had learned so much from them. And she ceded that on to me. So as a child, I used to follow my mummy around to see how she was taking care of people. And now, when I see how the Americans are being taken care of or not being taken care of or being fooled, I say, this is not the America where I was born, you know. It cannot be where my mother was trained. And I think it's just great that America is now again leading the world, thank God, and that there are states who have turned their backs on all this nonsense. And I start to feel proud again of having been born in America. I was not proud until about, 4 weeks ago, when they started doing something that, you know, the Europeans are just a hopeless. The Germans, hopeless. And this world here is starting to be a living, it's hell, it's nightmare here. Because, you know, Merkel and all her, I think they're killing people here. That's what I think.
You think they're killing, wait, let me just stop you right there. You think they're killing people?
This vaccination is killing people. I mean, the statistics are showing, you know, the care homes in all of Europe where vaccination has taken place, the vaccination wave is followed by a wave of deaths. Now, we're not saying, we can't say that these deaths are due to the vaccine because those poor people, 80 and above, are never looked at. There are never any autopsies. You know, they say, no, it has nothing to do with it. They just collapsed and died, but their time was up. Yeah, but there has been a very, very perceptive German, yeah, he collected all the data of care homes in Germany, and he has just published this. It's just horrifying. The wave of vaccination is virtually always followed by a wave of death, wherever you look. And this is the same in England, by the way. And English has also done that. And we're publishing, our second book is now appearing. It is in German in 2 weeks. And that picture is in that book. And we're not saying, but when we see this, my thought is, oh my God, are the German politicians killing their own citizens? And the British are thinking the same. Because if you don't start thinking about this, you'll never follow it up. And it is our damn duty to find out whether our poor elderly citizens are dying because of the vaccination. And you don't go around getting rid of their bodies and cremating them. You know, this is what's happening here. So there's no evidence. There will be no evidence. What all you have to do is, you know, do an autopsy, a post-mortem, and look in the brain, in the lung, to see whether you see any clots. And if you see the clots, there you are. Period. It's that simple.
So this cremation is almost as a way to get rid of evidence?
If the evidence were there, it's not there anymore. If you cremate it, obviously. I don't have any more to say than that. Should the evidence be there, it will then not be present anymore at any time in the next weeks. Because, you know, these postmortems can be done a week later, 2 weeks later. That's okay. The clots are still there, all right? This is, you see, the evidence is so damning. And I tell you, if a young person in the U.S. gets his shot, his or her shot, and starts getting the splitting headache, you better go to your emergency doc and say, take a good look at me. Do I have a brain clot or not? Or if you start becoming short of breath, you go to that emergency. Are clots being formed in my lung? Because if they do, what you present with is the picture of pneumonia. Or if you have a thick arm, you know, has a clot been formed in my arm? Or a thick leg, has a clot been formed in my deep leg vein? Because if it has, you better help me. Because if that thrombus, you know, loosens and gets into the bloodstream, I may die of a lung pulmonary embolism. I think this is all known to everyone, isn't it? I hope so. And you know that that many young women had died of lung embolisms. My God. Or if, you know, when the clotting factors are consumed, what happens is that people start to bleed because you have too few platelets, the clotting factors are gone, clumped up in the brain or wherever you want, okay? Have you seen these people with, you know, bleeding? You could see in the skin or bleedings into the brain, then they get a stroke, massive hemorrhages, or into your abdomen, then they can die, you know? This sort of thing is really serious. It's not something you turn away from. It's something that a doctor has to look at.
Women of childbearing age are concerned that this vaccine, the gene-based vaccines in particular, can cause infertility. Is there any merit to that?
Well, there certainly are scientific reasons that would say, yes, this possibility is real. Very real, in fact. But it's a bit complicated. So I would not be able to explain this in minutes, and I would need, you know, to have a picture, but for sure there are reasons to be afraid, and I would certainly follow the recommendation that Pfizer-BioNTech, I think, says that pregnant women should not be vaccinated, and people, women who have been vaccinated should not get pregnant. I mean, the very fact that they say this means that it can't be, you know, taken out of the blue, the whole thing. Regrettably, they never thought about clot formation as, you know, a possibility. But this infertility does not go via clot formation. It's yet another pathway, which is rather complicated, rather fascinating scientifically. I read up on it. Fascinating and true.
But the risk is there then?
Yes, I think so. Theoretical risk is there. And I also have a daughter, and she's 16. And I told her, you know, first of all, never ever think of getting this criminal jab. But if you should be so foolish as to want to do it and you do it, don't ever get pregnant within 8 weeks after that. In fact, you shouldn't get pregnant a long time after that. Sorry. You know, I mean, it's so incredible that this sort of thing can be allowed to be done. No one who has children can do this to our children. Start with all this mask, you know, and killing our children because of the masks. We are just absolutely without words to express our horror of what is happening to the younger generation here. You know, one of our colleagues has just finished a masked study in children, measuring the CO2 concentration behind the masks, and is absolutely horrifying. These masks increase the concentration manyfold above the highest concentration of CO2 that is allowed at the working place of a German adult. If that concentration were here right now, I would not be able to work in this company. And those children are running around for hours poisoning themselves, and it is the first study done in children at all. And it's going to be published, and then we're going to take people to court. All these teachers and all these politicians for a crime against humanity. And there's no immunity to protect them against a tribunal because they are not allowed to kill our children, okay? Point. I get so furious.
I think we've established this, but I just want to reiterate this point again. You are a medical doctor. You are also a scientist. How dangerous are these gene-based vaccines?
They are so dangerous, in my opinion, that I get nightmares thinking that this vaccination, global vaccination, is going to be installed on a permanent basis. Because, you see, let me tell you this. I showed you this waste product. This is seen by the killer lymphocyte. Comes and destroys, scrapes on your wall, okay? Now, here. Now, the thing is this. These lymphocytes are in your body, in my body. Most of them are resting in the lymphoid organs, lymph nodes, spleen, okay? It's only when they are called to arms that they come out, and they're called to arms when they see this waste product displayed on a cell. So out they come from the lymph nodes, they see this, they go into battle, kill their own cells. This is a sort of autoimmune disease, you see. And what then happens is they get aggressive. So it goes back to the lymph nodes, say, I will now undergo a clonal expansion, so they divide. So out of one cell, you get 2, 4, 8. And they go and rest again. If this happens again, you don't have one killer lymphocyte coming out. You'll have 2 or 4 coming out. And they are going to rummage and all go for the cell, okay? So this is what one would say is an overactive immune system. Moreover, if you have this spike and You have made antibodies against this spike, all right? These antibodies are also going to come and bind to the spike. And once the antibodies bind to the spike on the vessel wall, okay, they are going to call for another arm of the immune system to come and attack. So you're going to have a massive attack. Now, this is going to take place when you do the next vaccination. This is happening to many people who have undergone the second shot. The second shot is always worse than the first shot in the first place, right? You hear about this everywhere. Because then you have more, and you may already have the first antibody. So what we now want to call immune-dependent enhancement of vaccination is going to take place. This means that if you were lucky this year, and 98 to 99% of the people getting the vaccine are lucky. They don't die, okay? They don't get seriously ill because their immune system is still fairly well balanced out. I liken this to, you know, your immune system is like an orchestra. If you get this bug, this coronavirus or any other coronavirus into your lung and you want to get rid of it, then the orchestra comes and plays, and your immune system will take care of those lung cells that have been infected and take care of them quietly and take them away, okay? There's no overreaction. You see, nature has our immune system well-tuned to everything. But if you go and start dabbling around with this orchestra and with the conductor and saying, play louder, you know, play louder, then the drums had to come, the trumpets had to come, when they're not supposed to come because the virus can be taken care of in a normal fashion, then you would have immune-dependent enhancement of an infection. So if a normal virus comes to the lung, that lung is going to be killed by your own immune system. This is what we call immune, which will depend both on antibodies and on the killer lymphocytes. It's a completely new type of immune-dependent enhancement. It's a completely new type of infectious immune enhancement, and it's very fascinating. I don't know myself how it's going to end. This should have been done in animal experiments. I don't like animal experiments, but if you're going to use these vaccines on humans, you better go and do the animal experiments beforehand and not do what is being done now, namely human experiments with a system that is so goddamn dangerous that I cannot understand that my own colleagues don't realize this. You see, and if there is anyone I say is at fault, I say it is my own colleagues and scientists, because they should damn well know this. And if they don't, they better sit down with people. I'm not alone in this. There are thousands who think as I do. And we would like to talk to our colleagues to find out why they don't think that this could be the case. Why they don't think that all these people with adverse events are getting clots all over the place. Why? Because this is not a matter of half-half. Either they are right or we are right. And I'm not saying that we are right. I'm just saying that if there's a grain of truth in what I think is true, and the events are evolving such that it seems as if we were right. I mean, we wrote this many months ago, okay? And they've all turned out to be right. So why don't we just sit down and talk about it, guys? Let's just sit down. But we have to, because of the world and because of our children and your children and your grandchildren and the next generations. We're not doing this for ourselves. You know, I have a family here. I have a little child. I'm not going to allow him to enter this experiment. I don't care who is doing this experiment and why they are doing this experiment. I am not going to allow my child to enter this experiment. And I tell you, politicians, and you guys of the big finance, and you pharmaceuticals, and the doctors who are in this, if you want to do it to your own beloved ones and your children, You're going to do it. But I say, please don't. I think more about your children than you do yourself.
Dr. Bhakti, what can people do to ensure that we do not head down a dangerous path that includes, let's say, vaccine passports and mandatory vaccination?
What you can do is what you are doing right now, namely sitting down and thinking like an American, not like a German, not like the British, but going the American way, okay? And remembering the saying, give me liberty or give me death. That comes from you guys, and you go for that. Get back your liberty. And don't say like the German saying, take my liberty and give me death. If you Americans all stand up and say, we want to be Americans again, you will do it. Half of the states have done it. The other half will follow because it's the only reasonable, correct, and civilized thing to do. If you don't, you are going to go back into barbarism, as the Germans are doing right now.
Dr. Sucharit Bhakti, thank you.
I wish you your freedom and liberty.
Thank you. And you too.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you guys for watching this video. Please remember that individuals like Dr. Sucharit Bhakti put so much at risk to their careers and to their personal lives in order to provide us the truth on COVID-19. So please make sure that you share this video with your friends and your family, and especially to those who are on the fence about receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. Please also be sure to like this video and don't forget to subscribe to The Last American Vagabond. I'm independent journalist Taylor Hudak, and I will see you all next time.